From the nation's capital, if it happens in America or anywhere in the world, you'll hear about it first here, right here. Now, your anchor, Ernie Brown.
America's Radio News Network.
The Drive Home.
News from around the world and across the nation. We have all of it for you right here on America's Radio News. It's 6 after the top of the hour. Here's some of the stories coming up for you today.
Christopher Dorner is wanted for a series of crimes, including assaults on officers and 3 homicides in Southern California in the past week.
A city on alert after a former police officer goes on a killing spree.
And we are arresting 250,000 people a year for something that half Americans think should be legal and an overwhelming majority feel should be left to the states.
Decriminalizing marijuana on both the state and federal levels.
Never examined me, never reviewed my medical history or records, knows nothing about my family history, could make a diagnosis from 2,400 miles away. She must be a genius.
Another comment and response about Chris Christie's weight. We're watching the world and sweeping the nation to bring you all the latest news. Well, Los Angeles police say officers guarding a target in an ex-officer's manifesto shot and wounded multiple people in Torrance who were in a pickup. L.A. Police Lieutenant Andrew Neiman said the officers were deployed in response to Christopher Dorner's written threats to department officials in a rambling 14-page manifesto. The Daily Breeze in Torrance also reports that there was another police shooting nearby involving another pickup truck, but the driver wasn't hurt. Authorities say Dorner implicated himself in the killing of 2 people in Irvine over the weekend. He's also the suspect in the overnight killing of a police officer and critical wounding of another cop. Police don't say how seriously the people in Torrance were injured, but they're on the lookout to find that former officer. The White House's pick for the CIA chief said the harsh interrogation technique known as waterboarding is reprehensible and should not be used on terror suspects, but he's refusing to call it a form of torture. John Brennan said waterboarding should never have been legal and will never be used under his watch if he's confirmed as the CIA director, but he stopped short several times of calling it torture despite pointed questioning by Senator Carl Levin of Michigan. Waterboarding simulates drowning. Critics call it a form of torture. It was used at least three cases against terror suspects during the administration of President Bush. President Barack Obama ordered it banned shortly after taking office in 2009. And union leaders are rolling out a 14-city campaign to mobilize support for President Obama's immigration overhaul plans. AFL-CIO President Richard Trumka said the Labor Federation will hold rallies, educate voters, and pressure elected officials using the same grassroots technique that helped reelect President Obama. The campaign began yesterday in Raleigh, North Carolina, and will continue Monday in Las Vegas. Trumka says labor and business leaders also continue to work out an agreement on revising the nation's guest worker program that allows businesses to hire foreign workers for seasonal employment. Unions strongly support a path to citizenship for the nation's estimated 11 million illegal immigrants, saying the change will lead to better wages and working conditions. Unions also hope to boost sagging membership ranks from the workers who would become new citizens. Well, the gun control debate continues in Washington as people from both sides give testimony to either restrict access to guns or retain Second Amendment rights as they are. Some of the most powerful testimony has been the harrowing personal testimony given by victims of gun violence, like former Congresswoman Gabrielle Giffords and those who've been affected by the loss of loved ones to gun violence. Congressman Elijah Cummings of Maryland shared his personal experience on CNN.
A year and a half ago, my nephew Christopher Cummings was an honor student, 20 years old at Old Dominion University in Virginia. He was robbed at 5 o'clock in the morning and shot to death. And his roommate was also shot. And I got to tell you, I can feel the emotion right now that I felt when I went into his room and to see his blood and body tissue spread over the walls. It's a very painful thing. And I think, and when the Sandy Hook incident came up, I got to tell you so that it brought it all back up. And people want solutions to this gun violence problem. And I'm so glad to be joining with Scott and others to try to do some common sense legislation that'll help resolve those kind of matters.
And then we go to a little bit of sound from John Brennan in his hearing to become CIA directors. There were some protesters that showed up today, and Senator Dianne Feinstein finally had to call for a recess.
Nominee to lead the Central Intelligence Agency. I am deeply grateful to President Obama for the confidence he has placed in me by sending my name forward to the Senate for consideration. I would not be here today without the love and support of my wife, Kathy, who has been my life partner for 34 years, and who, like the spouses of many other public servants and intelligence professionals, has made numerous sacrifices over the years.
Would you pause, Mr. Brennan? If you would remove that individual, please, as quickly as you can. Thank you.
And I'm very pleased to be joined today by my wife, Kathy, and my brother, Tom.
I speak for the mothers.
All right. We will stop again. All right.
Pakistan, Somalia, and who else? Who else? Where else?
Please remove that woman.
The CIA and the Obama administration refuse to even tell Congress. They won't even tell Congress what countries we are killing children.
Please.
Senator Feinstein.
If you could please expedite the removal.
And then we go to this exchange between Senator John McCain and the chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, General Martin Dempsey, and the Senate Armed Services Committee this morning about the Benghazi attacks.
We base our response on the combined effects of what we get from the intelligence community, and that's the network of intel agencies, as well, importantly, based on what we get from the State Department and the chief of mission and chief of station in the country.
Did you ever get the message that said they could not withstand a sustained attack on the consulate?
I was tracking that intelligence. I was tracking through General.
Did you receive that information?
I did, and I saw it.
So it didn't bother you?
It bothered me a great deal.
Then
but
why
we never
didn't you
received
put forces
the
in place to be ready to respond?
Because we never received a request to do so, number one. And number two,
you never heard of Ambassador Stevens' repeated warnings about the lack of
security. I had, sir, through General Hamm. But we never received a request for support from the State Department, which would have allowed us to put forces on the ground.
So it's the State Department's fault.
I'm not blaming the State Department. I'm sure they had their own
assessment. Who would you blame?
Sorry, sir?
Who is responsible then?
I stand by the report of the Accountability Review Board.
Coming up on America's Radio News, we'll find more about this former police officer that has killed already three people. They're trying to find him in Southern California, although the search has extended into Las Vegas. Lance Armstrong deciding whether he's going to be talking to anybody anymore. And Congress getting inside information about the use of drones this morning. From Alaska to Florida, from Hawaii to Maine, coast to coast, this is America's Radio News.
Bringing you the very latest from across America and around the world. America's Radio News. Breaking news and the interviews everybody else will talk about. This is America's Radio News.
19 after the top of the hour, this is Ernie Brown on America's Radio News. Prosecutors say victims and witnesses in the Colorado theater shootings have been pestered by conspiracy theorists, impersonated in court filings, and have their addresses and phone numbers posted online. In a motion made public late yesterday, prosecutors say some victims are concerned for their safety. Prosecutors asked the judge to ensure that victims and witnesses' names are redacted from any documents released in the future, although many were identified in previously released court filings. James Holmes is charged with killing 12 people and wounding 70 at a suburban Denver theater on July 20th. He's scheduled to enter a plea next month. Now, the judge has barred attorneys and investigators from speaking publicly about the case and sealed many documents, prompting numerous objections and requests for information from media outlets and others. Deep-fried foods may be causing trouble in the Deep South. A study finds that people who consume a lot of fried foods and drinks like sweet tea and soda were 41% more likely to suffer a stroke than people who ate that way about once a month. Researchers say the study might help explain why blacks in the Southeast suffer more strokes. Blacks were five times more likely than whites to have the Southern dietary pattern. The diet tied to the highest stroke risk was heavy on fried foods, hamburgers, hot dogs, bacon, ham, liver, gizzards, sugary drinks, that kind of thing. In contrast, people who ate a lot of vegetables, fruits, fish, and whole grains had a lower stroke risk. That was reported today at a stroke conference in Honolulu. A report of a burned pickup truck on a Southern California mountain road is being investigated amid a manhunt for a fired Los Angeles police officer suspected in three murders. TV News helicopters have shown a helicopter drop a rifle-equipped team onto a mountain near Big Bear this afternoon. San Bernardino County Sheriff Deputy Zach Beckham says a pickup fire was reported, but there's been no sighting of the suspect, Christopher Dorner. Now, what is behind this guy? Ed Miller, an Emmy Award-winning investigative reporter and the former chief national correspondent for America's Most Wanted, joins us on America's Radio News. Check him out, edmillerreports.com. Ed, thanks for coming on. We appreciate it.
Hey, Ernie. You know, this is a man who has sworn to wage war against his former comrades. Police brass are calling him now a homicidal maniac. There are at least 40 different locations that are being guarded. So in other words, these are police brass, former, what would it be, associates or his superiors that he has threatened. And he, not just the police brass themselves, but their families, and he has threatened to get them. Some of his quotes are unbelievable in a manifesto that he said. This is a man who said, "I do not fear death. I died long ago." He said, "Look to your wives, your husbands, and surviving children directly in the face and tell them the truth as to why your children are dead." In other words, he is holding them responsible for his being fired from the Los Angeles Police Department, and he is going after their families. He says, another quote, "I will bring unconventional warfare to those in LAPD uniform, whether on or off duty." And of course, you know what happened this morning, that he shot another police officer, not in LAPD, not a Los Angeles police officer, but in Irvine. This is a very, very dangerous man.
What set him off? What put him on this road?
Well, what put him on this road, first of all, this has been going on for some time. He is seeking revenge against several former police bosses. He's going after their families because he believes that he was fired unjustly from the Los Angeles Police Department. Just very quickly to go back, what happened was he believed that he witnessed some police brutality by his former partner. So he reported it, and there was a police hearing, and they said no, there was no police brutality, but instead they fired him. And he's been on this rampage ever since. So he's saying that he's trying to clear his name, which of course is, you know, by far his name has now been ruined way worse than anything he could have imagined, simply being involved with these murders. So what he really did is last Saturday, this is where it first started. Last Saturday, he killed the daughter and fiance of his former attorney, Keith Lawrence and Monica Kwan. And that's what started this. And then, of course, he went off on this rampage overnight.
Now, Ed, I saw a story that said they've stretched the manhunt out as far as Las Vegas on this as well.
Actually, it's even further than that. It's now down to Mexico. And what they're concentrating on right now, simply because of his vehicle being found, and that is his vehicle that was found in Big Bear. That's a mountain community where a lot of folks outside of Los Angeles go skiing. But it's way beyond Big Bear. It's up to Las Vegas because he has a house near Las Vegas. Now down to Mexico because they fear he could have gone there. But this is a man who exists. The real danger here is this is a man who is certainly not afraid of danger. He knows how police operate. He used to be a police officer, and this is a guy who can, you know, stay up with only a few hours sleep. He is vengeful, and he is armed with assault weapons. They believe several assault weapons.
Do they have any idea where he might be, any direction they're going, any leads?
No, the lead would be, of course, right now they're searching Big Bear, this area in Big Bear. They actually helicoptered a SWAT team in there because of the vehicle being set fire. They believe he might still be in that area. But, you know, again, this is a guy who's very, very clever. He also, they believe much earlier today that he was in the San Diego area and tried to hijack a boat because they found his wallet and ID down there, but he was nowhere to be found. So again, there's a lot of false alarms. He may be doing this. He may have set fire to that vehicle in Big Bear and jumped into another one. This is a very clever, clever man. Again, an expert marksman. A marksman and a very big guy, 6 feet tall, 270 pounds, big, dangerous, vengeful man.
Ed Miller, Emmy Award-winning investigative reporter, the former chief national correspondent for America's Most Wanted. Check him out, edmillerreports.com. Ed, always a pleasure. Thanks for coming on.
Thank you, Ernie.
We'll keep you up to date, too, on what's the latest news on that particular story in California. On Wall Street, the Dow ended down today about 42.5 points. NASDAQ was down 3.33. S&P 500 down about 2.75. Coming up on the program, the head of the NRA doesn't think any of the gun bills being offered right now are going to pass. No internet gambling in New Jersey just yet, says the governor. And Leon Panetta said the attack in Benghazi was too quick. They didn't have time to respond. Keeping you up to date, the latest breaking news, this is America's Radio News.
You can listen to them talk about the news.
Or you can listen to us break in. This is America's Radio News. Broadcasting from the nation's capital, where we catch the news before it gets away. This is America's Radio News.
Here to keep you up to date with the latest breaking news right here on America's Radio News. I'm Ernie Brown, and here are some of the stories I'm following for you on the drive home.
Christopher Dorner is wanted for a series of crimes, including assaults on officers and three homicides in Southern California in the past week.
A city on alert after a former police officer goes on a killing spree.
And we are arresting 250,000 people a year for something that half Americans think should be legal and an overwhelming majority feel should be left to the states.
Decriminalizing marijuana on both the state and federal levels.
Never examined me. Never reviewed my medical history or records, knows nothing about my family history, could make a diagnosis from 2,400 miles away. She must be a genius.
Another comment and response about Chris Christie's weight. We're watching the world and sweeping the nation to bring you all the latest news. New England bracing for a major winter storm, expected to dump up to 2 feet of snow in some places from tomorrow into Saturday. The National Weather Service says most of the southern New England area could get between 18 and 24 inches of snow starting tomorrow morning and continuing into Saturday afternoon. Now, the Cape could get a little bit less, although forecasts vary widely. Meteorologist William Babcock says it's looking like it's going to be a very powerful storm. If everything falls the way it has in the past, it's potentially going to be one of the top 10 snowstorms in New England history. New York City Mayor Michael Bloomberg said the city is as ready as they can be. They're expecting anywhere from 4 to 6 inches. They said if bad weather is going to happen, it's best that it happen on the weekend. By the way, if you are traveling to New England, anywhere up in the Northeast, you need to check and make sure your flight is going to actually take place. Several airlines have said they're canceling flights. In fact, schools in Boston, public schools, closed tomorrow already in anticipation of the storm. The body of a man who fatally shot a school bus driver and held a 5-year-old boy hostage for nearly a week before dying in a shootout with the FBI has finally been removed from his underground bunker in Alabama. FBI spokesman Jason Pack said the body was removed last night after agents determined there were no other explosives on the property besides those that were discovered in a PVC pipe leading into the bunker and inside the bunker itself. The coroner said that there'll be an autopsy performed at the State Forensic Laboratory in Montgomery. He did say that the man had been shot several times but didn't go into any more detail about how he died. And Iranian President Mahmoud Ahmadinejad said his country cannot hold meaningful talks with the U.S. on Tehran's disputed nuclear program if Washington is threatening the country. His comments at a news conference in Cairo today echoed those of Iran's supreme leader, who said earlier in the day that American proposals for direct talks are pointless while Washington is holding a gun to Iran through sanctions. Ahmadinejad said the reason is clear. Talks are being held to arrive at an understanding, not to impose anything. Such talks would be meaningless if somebody raises a club and imposes something on Iran. He said talks are meaningful only if they're based on mutual respect, justice, and equality. Chris Versace joins us. He's the editor of Power Trend Profits Investing Newsletter and the trading service ETF Power Trader, as well as a frequent contributor to Forbes.com. You can go to ChrisVersace.com or you can follow him on Twitter @_ChrisVersace. Chris, welcome to the program.
Thanks, Ernie. How are you?
I'm doing really well. I appreciate your coming on. Now, I always look at the financial headlines before I talk to you, and they're always interesting. For example, this one, traders watching scary charts, bearish forecasts.
Yeah, that's pretty good.
Yeah. What does it mean?
So when you invest, there's a couple different ways to invest. There's the fundamental way where you're looking at all the economic data, demographic data, and other things, which is really what I tend to do. But then there are other guys who simply just look at the charts, meaning if you draw over the last 30, 60, 90, 180 days a chart of a particular stock or an index, be it the S&P 500 or the Dow Jones Industrial and Average, they can draw certain conclusions based on what the chart looks like. And we call this chart investing and or technical investing if you lay over certain algorithms.
Does it work?
You know, if there was a silver bullet, Ernie, there would be a lot more people using it.
Yeah, I've had that conversation about people who chart stocks, and they just swear by it. Because to me, it just seems it's a random thing. But I have people who swear by it, and they have more money than I do, so I have to think that it probably works.
Two thoughts. One, maybe you should listen.
Yeah, probably.
And then the other one is, you know, I joke about it, there being no silver bullet. But the reality is, to be a successful investor over time, you've got to have what I call an arrow of quivers. And you can pull them out, you know, different ones at different times. Sometimes you need to look at technical investing and charts if you're trying to hone in on an entry or exit point. But to me, by and large, it's really driven by the fundamentals.
Now, I know the Fed is still pumping money into the economy. Is this going to have a negative response later on? I keep hearing the word inflation.
Well, make no mistake, Ernie, we have inflation now. Right. If you take a look at the gas pump, year to date, gas prices have climbed north of 8%. If we look at food prices, they're climbing even faster than that. So, you know, when you sit back and you think that, geez, most Americans spend anywhere from 15 to 17% of their average weekly paycheck on food and gas in one form or another, there's a tremendous amount of inflation out there. Don't be fooled just because the Fed says, oh, well, we stripped that out.
Is there a direct correlation between their pumping the money in and inflation?
Not as yet, no. I mean, you know, what we've seen by the Fed pumping the money in and keeping rates artificially low, we're seeing really no return on investment for individual investors, i.e. through CDs or bank accounts. And I think you're starting to see people after several years of this start to say, oh, you know, maybe I should put some money in the market. It's rebounded nicely. But the problem with that, Ernie, is the average retail investor who invests in a method of buy and sleep, not buy and do your homework and continue to invest. Mm-hmm. Those buy and sleepers, they tend to come in at the market absolutely at the wrong time.
Yeah. Now, let me ask you, I keep also hearing the story that those in bonds right now looking for protection are going to really regret it very soon.
Yeah. I mean, there's an inverse relationship to yields and interest rates. So if and when the Fed has to tighten, be it in response to, you know, inflation like we were talking about, you will probably see a push from away from bonds and into equities. That's probably going to be later in the year at least.
Okay. Now, let me ask you this. I don't know if you know the specifics of this, but I was interested in reading about Michael Dell, who created his company in his dorm room at the University of Texas, deciding that he wants to take his company private. Do companies get to a point where they say they just don't want to deal with Wall Street anymore?
Well, you know, to some extent, dealing with Wall Street can be very challenging. You know, you have to put out these forecasts, and if you don't meet them, you know, your stock can get really punished, and it really impedes your ability to do certain things. Plus, you have to remember that there's a fair amount of cost associated with being a public company. There's listing fees, filing fees with the SEC, attorney's fees, and all that. And I think that maybe by going private, what Mr. Dell can do is kind of reshape his business out of the limelight, because it's no secret that Dell and HP are hurting as consumers and businesses alike shift increasingly towards tablets away from desktop PCs in particular.
Chris Versace on the web at chrisversace.com. Thank you, Chris, for coming on. I appreciate it.
Anytime, Ernie. You know that.
At the international desk, Andrew Tallman now.
China's new leader says the ruling Communist Party should tolerate sharp outside criticism. At remarks made Wednesday at a gathering of non-Communist Party groups, newly installed Party General Secretary Xi Jinping urged attendees to speak truthfully, give advice even if it's unpleasant, and accurately reflect the voice of the public. He also asked all party organizations to accept advice and criticism from outside the party. The comments have been taken with some skepticism, as China has routinely detained and imprisoned people critical of the party and the government, and tightly censors newspapers, other publications, and the internet. In other speech news, Egypt's prime minister has condemned religious edicts by hardline Muslim clerics that called for the killing of opposition leaders. Egypt's government is also considering legal action against them. As we reported yesterday, Mohammed El-Baradei, head of the opposition group Nati Nal Salvation Front, had criticized the ruling party for its silence over the fatwas declaring opposition equivalent to opposing God. Al-Azhar, the Sunni Muslim world's premier Islamic institution, and Morsi's Muslim Brotherhood group also condemned the fatwas. From the America's Radio News International Desk, I'm Andrew Tallman.
Coming up on America's Radio News, the 30-year fixed mortgage remains at low levels. Controversy over a Civil War figure in Memphis, Tennessee. And Nike telling Oregon's governor, cough up some tax breaks, or we may have to look at other places to make our shoes. Keeping you up to date, the latest breaking news. This is America's Radio News.
You can listen to them talk about the news.
Or you can listen to us break in. This is America's Radio News. If it breaks in this town, we dig deep till we know the truth. This is America's Radio News.
News from around the world and across the nation right here on America's Radio News at 11 before the top of the hour. This is Ernie Brown. A juror who helped wrongfully convict a Texas man for murder says he wishes he would have had an opportunity to see more evidence during the trial. Michael Morton served 25 years in prison for killing his wife, Christine, but he was freed on DNA evidence in 2011. The evidence showed he didn't do it. Ken Anderson, the case's prosecutor, is now a judge. Morton's attorneys allege Anderson withheld evidence indicating their client's innocence. Anderson is facing a court of inquiry on the matter. Mark Landon was the jury foreman. He testified today that evidence would have lent credibility to defense theories that an intruder did the killing. The jury never saw that evidence. Landon also cast doubt on past suggestions that prosecutors joked with jurors after the trial that police files could have helped Morton's defense. For the next 14 weeks, the Boy Scouts of America will be the focus of prayers, petitions, and pressure tactics aimed at swaying a vote on whether to ease its ban on gays as scouts or adult leaders. The decision will be made in late May by the roughly 1,400 voting members of the BSA's National Council. The Scouts Executive Board had been expected to rule on the membership policy yesterday, but instead they said more time was needed for deliberations. At stake is a proposal to ease the ban, allowing sponsors of scout units to decide for themselves whether to admit gays. Gay rights groups say no unit should be allowed to discriminate. Some conservative religious leaders and advocacy groups want the ban to stay in place nationwide. And here's one of those stories that shows you no good deed goes unpunished, although at least this time they won't be punished. An Indiana prosecutor plans to drop illegal possession charges against a couple who nursed an injured white-tailed deer back to health and kept it in an enclosure on their farm for 2 years. Decatur County Chief Prosecutor Douglas Brown tells the Indianapolis Star the charges against Connersville police officer Jeff Chounsler and his wife Jennifer will be dropped by the end of the week. The thousands of people were outraged by the case. They signed an online petition calling for the charges to be dropped, saying it was simply a good deed. And the Curiosity rover has drilled a test hole in a Martian rock in preparation for the real thing. Images released by NASA showed a ring of powder that was generated by the drill at the end of the rover's robotic arm. The hole measured less than an inch deep. Scientists plan to analyze the latest activity, dubbed a mini drill test, before commanding Curiosity to drill even deeper. One of its major tasks is to drill into a rock and transfer the ground-up powder to its onboard laboratories for analysis. That would be a first on Mars. Curiosity landed in an ancient crater near the Martian equator last year on a mission to gauge whether environmental conditions were favorable for microbes to exist now or in the past. Well, the sequester, a series of domestic and defense cuts totaling more than $1 trillion, are set to go into effect March 1st. That was created less than 2 years ago by Congress and the White House as the ultimate insurance policy against legislative inaction on the country's debt problems. If the sequester goes into effect, it would devastate the economy, according to many politicians in Washington. Congressman John Yarmuth of Kentucky told MSNBC that we should avoid the sequester at all costs.
Well, I think some of the things you mentioned can be very, very useful. I think certainly eliminating tax subsidies for oil companies, some of the farm subsidies that are unjustified. I'd like to see us consider a securities transaction tax, the so-called Wall Street tax that can raise tens of billions of dollars. And you know, we can do some cutting, but in that CBO report that you mentioned, it also said that the kind of austerity program which the sequester would represent would be damaging to the recovery, would hurt GDP, and of course that's in line with what most economists believe. So I think we got to be very careful when we just say we've got to cut without regard to the impact of those cuts, both on the economy and on some very important programs.
Now, I just mentioned to you about the Boy Scouts having a difficult decision to make in the next couple of months. Former Den mother Jennifer Terrell, she said the treatment of gays by the Boy Scouts of America is a very personal issue for her. Take a listen to what she told CNN.
I don't know. I don't trust my gut when it comes to the BSA because I always think they're going to do the right thing and then they don't. So I'm really actually super nervous about it.
You seem very emotional about it.
I am. It's really personal to me. I didn't want to even join the Boy Scouts, and he wanted to. He was so excited. It was so hard to tell him, you know, no, he doesn't understand that people are discriminatory. So I agreed to go, and I spoke to the Cub Master, and he said, it'll be fine. You won't have any problems. And I didn't. And actually, that same day, their leader canceled and said, I can't do it. So they asked me to be leader, knowing full well that I was gay. I never had a problem until they asked me to be treasurer. I found a lot of mistakes. I started asking a lot of questions. And then that day that I was supposed to have a meeting to say, where's this money, is the day that I received the phone call saying, oh, by the way, you're gay. You can't be here anymore.
The city of Los Angeles is on high alert as they continue to search for former police officer Christopher Dorner in connection with the shooting of three officers this morning and the killing of an Irvine couple over the weekend. Chief Charlie Beck of the LAPD held a press conference earlier today and provided Dorner's description and said he's considered armed and dangerous.
As you all know, the LAPD is working in coordination with law enforcement agencies throughout Southern California in apprehending Christopher Jordan Dorner. Christopher Dorner is wanted for a series of crimes, including assaults on officers and three homicides in Southern California in the past week. The Los Angeles Police Department and our allied law enforcement agencies are implementing all measures possible to ensure the safety of our LAPD personnel, their families, and the Los Angeles community. We will continue to do so until Dorner is apprehended and all threats have been abated. Dorner is to be considered armed and extremely dangerous. Christopher Jordan Dorner is described as a male African-American, approximately 6 foot tall, 270 pounds. He's 33 years of age. He has black hair and brown eyes.
And then we go to Governor Chris Christie and Dr. Connie Mariano, a former White House physician. They had a little bit of a public smackdown yesterday. The hot-button issue, of course, is the two are taking jabs at each other on cable news programs. It's all about Governor Christie's weight problem. Here's a little bit about how it went down.
I worry that he may have a heart attack, he may have a stroke. It's almost like a time bomb waiting to happen unless he addresses those issues before he runs for office.
I find it fascinating that a doctor in Arizona who's never met me, never examined me, never reviewed my medical history or records, knows nothing about my family history, could make a diagnosis from 2,400 miles away. She must be a genius. My children saw that last night. And she sat there on TV and said, I'm afraid he's going to die in office. I have four children between 9 and 19. You know, my 12-year-old son comes to me last night and said, Dad, are you going to die? I mean, come on. This is irresponsible stuff. This is just another hack who wants 5 minutes on TV.
Well, it was rather shocking to hear those things. I was in clinic, so I did not hear his broadcast, but he used some pretty strong words there. Out of deference to him, I'm not going to comment on that, but I can only share with you that phone conversation, when I think of it, the words gracious and appreciative do not come to mind.
Coming up on The Drive Home on America's Radio News, a major winter storm heading towards New England for a very chilly weekend. Check your flights if you're going into that part of the country. A lot of flights have been canceled already. Defense cuts will hurt the economy, says the defense secretary. And unions, they love the president's immigration plan. They see new members possibly cropping up for them. Live from Washington, D.C., the information you need, you'll always find it right here on America's Radio News, coming up.
On your radio and online at AmericasRadioNewsNetwork.com. This is America's Radio News.
from the nation's capital. If it happens in America or anywhere in the world, you'll hear about it first here, right here. Now, your anchor, Ernie Brown.
America's Radio News Network.
The Drive Home.
News from around the world and across the nation right here on America's Radio News. Six after the top of the hour, the Drive Home continues with these stories coming up.
We believe there's a better way to lower the deficit, but Americans do not support sacrificing real spending cuts for more tax hikes.
What will it take to get money problems under control in Washington?
My nephew, Christopher Cummings, was an honor student, 20 years old at Old Dominion University in Virginia. He was robbed at 5 o'clock in the morning.
The gun discussion takes a personal turn.
General Hamm, on that night, every order ever suggests that a military asset, did he order a military asset in motion and someone told him to stand down?
No.
Who knew what was happening in Benghazi on September 11th? We're watching the world and sweeping the nation to bring you all the latest news. We begin with the weather. New England bracing for a major winter storm expected to dump up to 2 feet of snow in some places from tomorrow into Saturday. The National Weather Service says most of southern New England could get between 18 and 24 inches of snow starting tomorrow morning and continuing into Saturday afternoon. The Cape could get a little bit less, although forecast totals are varying depending on who you ask. If everything falls the way it has, the potential for this storm could make it among the top 10 snowstorms in New England history. New York City also bracing for snow anywhere from 4 to 6 inches. Mayor Michael Bloomberg says the city's ready, and if bad weather has to happen, it's best to have it on a weekend. Now, if you're flying into New England, any city up in the Northeast, you'd best check with your airline because there are some airlines that are already canceling flights. In Boston, schools are going to be closed tomorrow in anticipation of this storm. Members of congressional intelligence panels are studying a top-secret memo that gives the White House rationale for drone strikes targeting al-Qaeda operatives overseas. The memo was provided just hours before President Obama's choice to head the CIA faced a Senate Intelligence Committee confirmation hearing. John Brennan helped manage the drone program. The delivery of that document suggested that the White House is trying to clear obstacles to Obama's effort to put Brennan in the top spot at the CIA. He tried to put him there before, back in 2009, but that effort ran into opposition amid charges that Brennan supported harsh interrogation techniques that were used when he was at the CIA. The hearing aired some details today about some of the most controversial programs used in the covert war on al-Qaeda. And the U.S. Anti-Doping Agency says it's been in contact with Lance Armstrong. They're giving him more time to decide if he wants to cooperate with the investigators and tell more about what he knows of doping and cycling. USADA investigated the cyclist's performance-enhancing drug use and banned him for life from sports. It's given him an extra 2 weeks to work out an interview with investigators under oath. USADA Chief Executive Travis Tigert says in a statement that his group has been in communication with Armstrong and his representatives, and they say, we understand he does want to be part of the solution to get doping out of cycling. And then we go to former LAPD police officer Christopher Dorner. He's on the run after a crime spree that began over the weekend in Irvine, California. He remains on the loose and is being considered armed and dangerous. At an earlier press conference, the LAPD police chief, Charlie Beck, listed the crimes they believe this man's committed so far.
On Sunday, February 3rd, 2012, in Irvine, California, a double homicide. During this incident, we believe Dorner shot and killed Monica Kwan and Keith Lawrence while they sat in a vehicle in a parking structure. Wednesday, February 6th, about 8:30 p.m. in San Diego, an attempt robbery, boat theft. Dorner attempted to steal a boat from a boat owner in San Diego. He was not successful and fled the location. This morning at 1:25 in Chino, California, LAPD officers assigned to a protection detail received a tip from a citizen that Dorner may be in the area. They observed Dorner, and Dorner fired upon the officers. Officers returned fire, and one officer received a non-life-threatening wound to his head, a graze wound literally inches from killing him. Dorner fled, and due to damage to the police vehicle because of his gunshots, the officers were unable to pursue him. Today, at 1:45 in Riverside, California, the murder and attempt murder of Riverside Police Department officers. Dorner ambushed two Riverside police officers, resulting in the death of one and the severe injury of the other.
Now, the latest on that story, authorities have confirmed a burned-out pickup truck found near a Southern California ski resort belongs to that fired Los Angeles police officer. The San Bernardino County Sheriff John McMahon says Christopher Dorner's truck found near the Bear Mountain ski area at Big Bear Lake, about 80 miles east of Los Angeles. There's a door-to-door search going on. They haven't found him yet. The confirmation hearing for John Brennan to become the next director of the CIA got underway earlier today. It's expected he'll face some difficult questioning, and he did. Now, he also had some protesters in the audience as well, and the committee chair, Dianne Feinstein, had to call in Capitol Security.
With the Capitol Police, please come in and clear the room. John, let's go. All signs out.
You are betraying democracy when you assassinate suspects. You are betraying democracy.
If the Capitol Police will clear the room, please.
John Brennan is still in favor of further resistance. He would serve in command at the CIA under Carter. He never spoke out against it. You are traitors if you can stand back. You are traitors to democracy.
I'm saying you're so old and you're so old.
Please clear the room. Let me say right up front that the process is that people are respectful, that they don't cheer, they don't hiss, they don't show signs, that this is to listen. If that's a problem for anybody, I ask you to leave the room now, because what we will do is remove you from the room. Let there be no doubt.
And she had to remove several more because they started shouting immediately after that, and eventually she shut down the hearing for a few minutes while they cleared the gallery. Recently, the White House has come under fire for that memo that says the U.S. can use drone strikes to take American citizens out should they be directly involved with a terrorist organization. Well, Press Secretary Jay Carney was asked if he felt it was possible that the strikes could have the effect of creating more militants than they kill.
Well, I would, in terms of the broader effort, I would refer you to the Pentagon, but the broader effort in terms of dealing with al-Qaeda. But the fact is, as John Brennan and others have made clear, our counterterrorism efforts are designed, including our targeted efforts, to limit civilian casualties. And I think any fair assessment of those efforts would draw you to the conclusion that they have significantly limited civilian casualties. I think the fact is that the methods that we use are designed specifically to avoid civilian casualties. I think it's fair to say that far fewer civilians lose their lives in an effort to go after senior leadership in al-Qaeda along the lines that we are discussing here, as opposed to an effort to invade a country with hundreds of thousands of troops and take cities and towns. So I think that, you know, these are issues that obviously concern everyone involved in the effort to combat al-Qaeda and to deal with the region as a whole. So that aspect of it is one that is very much in the front of everybody's minds when they make these decisions and move forward with actions.
Coming up on America's Radio News, deep fried foods may be causing some major health problems. Also, the Iranian government says they don't want to meet with the U.S. unless we do it their way. And unions love the president's immigration plan. They see some new members for their organization in the future. Keeping you up to date, the latest breaking news. This is America's Radio News and The Drive Home.
Bringing you the very latest from across America and around the world. America's Radio News. If it breaks in this town, we dig deep till we know the truth. This is America's Radio News.
This is The Drive Home, and this is Ernie Brown. Thanks for joining me 20 minutes after the top of the hour. It's a Thursday. Prosecutors, well, they're saying victims and witnesses in the Colorado theater shootings have been pestered by conspiracy theorists, impersonated in court filings, and had their addresses and phone numbers posted online. In a motion made public late yesterday, prosecutors say some victims are concerned for their safety. Prosecutors ask the judge to ensure the victims' and witnesses' names are redacted from any documents released in the future, although many were identified in previously released court filings. James Holmes is charged with killing 12 people and wounding 70 at a suburban Denver theater on July 20th. He He's scheduled to enter a plea next month. The judge has barred attorneys and investigators from speaking publicly about the case and sealed many documents, prompting numerous objections and requests for information from media outlets and others. The NCAA says they want a judge to throw out the federal antitrust lawsuit Pennsylvania's governor filed against it over Penn State's $60 million fine and other penalties resulting from the Jerry Sandusky child molestation scandal. College sports governing body said in a filing it disagrees with just about every allegation in the complaint against it initiated by Governor Tom Corbett last month. The NCAA says the penalties imposed under a July consent decree with the university are not due to regulation or not rather related to regulation of economic activity, so antitrust law does not apply. It also argues that Corbett lacks standing to sue. It calls the governor's lawsuit an inappropriate attempt to drag the federal courts into an intrastate political dispute. Corbett has said the NCAA overstepped its authority. His spokesperson said lawyers are going to be reviewing the NCAA's findings. And then we go to deep-fried foods that might be causing some trouble in the Deep South. A study finds that people who consume a lot of fried foods and drinks like sweet tea and soda, they're about 40% more likely to suffer a stroke than people who ate that way only about once a month. Researchers say the study might help explain why blacks in the Southeast suffer more strokes. Blacks were 5 times more likely than whites to have the Southern dietary pattern. The diet tied to the highest stroke risk was heavy on fried foods, things like hamburgers, hot dogs, bacon, ham, liver, gizzards, and sugary drinks. Now, in contrast, people who ate a lot of vegetables, fruits, fish, and whole grains had a lower stroke risk. Results reported today at a stroke conference being held in Honolulu. Well, the gun control debate continues in Washington as people from both sides give testimony to either restrict access to guns or retain Second Amendment rights as they are now. Some of the most powerful testimonies have been the harrowing personal testimony given by victims of gun violence, like former Congresswoman Gabrielle Giffords, and those who've been affected by the loss of a loved one to gun violence. Congressman Elijah Cummings of Maryland shared his personal experience with gun violence on CNN.
A year and a half ago, my nephew, Christopher Cummings, was an honor student, 20 years old at Old Dominion University in Virginia. He was robbed at 5 o'clock in the morning and shot to death. And his roommate was also shot. And I got to tell you, I can feel the emotion right now that I felt when I went into his room. And to see his blood and body tissue spread over the walls. It's a very painful thing. And I think, and when the Sandy Hook incident came up, I got to tell you so that it brought it all back up. And people want solutions to this gun violence problem. And I'm so glad to be joining with Scott and others to try to do some common sense legislation that'll help resolve those kind of matters.
Well, why didn't the U.S. offer a stronger military response to the attacks on our consulate in Benghazi last September? General Martin Dempsey told the Senate Armed Services Committee this morning it was in part because of how forces had been postured at the time, given concerns about other locations on 9/11. Senator McCain demanded to know why forces hadn't been stationed at our naval base in Crete when Benghazi was such a known danger area.
I was also concerned at that time with Sana'a in Yemen, Khartoum, Islamabad, Peshawar, Kabul, Baghdad. We had some pretty significant intel threat streams against those places as well.
I've seen some of those estimates, and none of them rose to the level of the threat in Benghazi. Did they rise to that level, that they could not withstand a sustained attack?
Yes, they were.
They did?
Yes, they did.
Well, so basically, you're saying what our postures and our capabilities allowed. You did what our capabilities allowed. We didn't have the capability to station forces as short place as go to Souda Bay, Crete.
Well, there were.
Did we have those capabilities?
We do have those capabilities, but they even those.
But we didn't do. But we didn't use those capabilities.
Well, sir, based on time, distance, and alert posture, as I said to Senator Reid a moment ago, they wouldn't have gotten there in time.
And it's an hour and a half flight, General, if you had them based there at Souda Bay, Crete.
And then at the prayer breakfast this morning, President Obama thinks prayer does work, but he's sorry that it has such a short shelf life.
I have to say, this is now our fifth prayer breakfast. And it is always just a wonderful event. But I do worry sometimes that as soon as we leave the prayer breakfast, everything we've been talking about the whole time at the prayer breakfast seems to be forgotten.
on the same day of the prayer breakfast. I mean, you'd like to think that the shelf life wasn't so short. But I go back to the Oval Office and I start watching the cable news networks, and it's like we didn't pray.
Coming up on America's Radio News, controversy over a Civil War figure in Memphis. Illegal immigrants may have a path to citizenship coming soon. And why is the post office in the trouble it's in? We'll have it coming up for you live from Washington, D.C. on America's Radio News as the drive home continues.
You can listen to them talk about the news.
Or you can listen to us break in. This is America's Radio News. Everybody else will talk about. This is America's Radio News.
Here to keep you up to date with the latest breaking news, this is Ernie Brown on America's Radio News. The drive home continues at 27 before the top of the hour. Here are some of the stories I'm following for you today.
We believe there's a better way to lower the deficit, but Americans do not support sacrificing real spending cuts for more tax hikes.
What will it take to get money problems under control in Washington?
My nephew, Christopher Cummings, was an honor student, 20 years old at Old Dominion University in Virginia. He was robbed at 5 o'clock in the morning.
The gun discussion takes a personal turn.
General Hamm, on that night, every order ever suggests that a military asset, did he order a military asset in motion and someone told him to stand down?
No.
Who knew what was happening in Benghazi on September 11th? We're watching the world and sweeping the nation to bring you all the latest news. Well, the man who's seeking to run the CIA says the Obama administration has never killed terror suspects when officials had the opportunity to capture them instead. White House nominee John Brennan denied there's any link between a surge in lethal drone attacks on militants overseas and the Obama administration's reluctance to hold suspects in U.S. detention centers. President Obama pledged to close the U.S. detention center at Guantanamo Bay, and no terror suspects have been sent there since he took office in 2009. Republican Senator Susan Collins of Maine noted at Brennan's confirmation hearing that targeted killings of suspects have more than increased sixfold during the Obama administration. Brennan cited a growth of al-Qaeda in Yemen as a reason for that increase. A Dallas promotions company suing Lance Armstrong to repay $12 million in bonuses it paid him for winning the Tour de France. Armstrong now admits he used performance-enhancing drugs and has been stripped of those victories. SCA Promotions filed its lawsuit today in Dallas District Court. The company tried to withhold the money in 2005 because of doping allegations, but ultimately settled with Armstrong during arbitration hearings. Now SCA says Armstrong's admission proves a conspiracy to cheat and defraud the company into paying him millions. That lawsuit also targets Armstrong agent Bill Stapleton as the defendant. And the principal of a Central Valley high school in California confiscated the student newspaper over an article that quoted school administrators as saying recent lockdown drills and two reports of weapons on campus revealed poor communication. Principal Shirley McNichols of Bear Creek High School in Stockton stopped distribution of 1,700 copies of the monthly Bruin Voice newspaper last week, saying a front-page article about allegedly outdated safety policies could panic students. The editor-in-chief, Justine Change, and advisor Kathy Duffel told the Record of Stockton that the principal was embarrassed about what the article exposed. McNichols says that's simply not true. Well, we told you yesterday about the post office. They want to drop Saturday delivery, at least the first-class mail. Rick Geddes joins us. He's an associate professor in the Department of Policy Analysis and Management at Cornell University. Professor Geddes, thank you for joining us. We appreciate it.
Thank you for inviting me, Ernie.
I'm curious, can the post office just make that decision on their own, or do they need Congress to say it's okay?
I think they're in hot water if they make that decision on their own, Ernie. It's not clear at all that they have that authority. In fact, Congress has the authority to decide what service standards are going to apply for postal services. And Congress has discussed this with the Postal Service several years ago and said, when the Postal Service asked back then if they could cut out Saturday delivery, and Congress said no. So it seems to me that there is a confrontation here between the Postal Service and Congress.
How did the Postal Service get into the position it's in now financially?
it's really comes back to basic changes that are undergoing in the U.S. economy. And the main change here is increasing use of electronic substitutes for letter communications. So people now can communicate with phone, faxes, email, texting, a whole set of other ways that are instantaneous and in some cases less costly than mailing a letter. So what we've seen is that the core function of the Postal Service, which is to deliver first-class letter mail, has declined by about one-third since peaking in 2001. So 2001 was actually the highest point, and people have become more comfortable with paying bills online and doing their banking online, all of those things where they used to put a stamp on a letter. And that decline of one-third in first-class mail volume is historic. There's no other example in the history of the post office in the U.S. where mail has dropped off like that. And you have to keep in mind, Ernie, that that's their most profitable service by far. They make about three times the amount of profit off each piece of first-class letter mail that they make off standard mail, or what people think of as advertising material. So when they're losing that first-class volume, and they also have to maintain this extensive distribution network that Congress tells them they have to maintain to deliver to every house, every address, 6 days per week, those high costs in combination with falling revenues has really created this problem, Ernie.
I know that I was reading a story, I think it was last year, they missed a pension payment for future retiree health benefits. And I think that the post office, I think last year, had an $11 billion hole. This year it's even going to be bigger than that. This ending Saturday service is going to only save $2 billion. Is it time now to rework promises made to employees?
Oh, well, I don't know about that, Ernie, that in terms of the contracts that unions have negotiated with the workers is something that needs to be considered. And they did lose $12 billion last year. They are losing about $25 million every day that they are in operation, just an astounding number. So I think they're going to have to rethink a lot of things. But the point that I've been trying to make, Ernie, is that we really need to rethink the business model under which the Postal Service operates. Really, I think that they have a tremendously valuable national asset in the form of this distribution network that gets to every address 6 days a week, which is an amazing accomplishment. They just need to be given the freedom, the sort of the legal ability to use that network more effectively to raise revenue. So I think that would be a big benefit. And I think the Postal Service could do a lot better if it were liberated from some of these rules that Congress has imposed on it.
What would be some of the ideas in using that network you think might work?
Oh, well, I'm basing my answer on what has been successful in other countries. You have to realize, Ernie, that the United States is way behind many other countries in terms of reforming its Postal Service. For example, all 27 countries that make up the European Union have eliminated their postal services. Some of those countries have privatized, like Holland and Germany, although not all of them have privatized. But in those countries, in Holland, the Dutch Post, for example, they offer both an addressed service and an unaddressed service. So you could have items delivered to households that were not addressed, perhaps at a discount. You could vary the frequency of delivery, both over the across neighborhoods and over the course of a year, in ways that the mailers actually would be willing to pay for. So there's a whole bunch of things that have gone on internationally, where the German Post, for example, Deutsche Post, has expanded its operations into many other countries, and is now a respected international logistics company, in addition to being postal.
Okay.
So there's a lot of things they could do, Ernie.
This is Professor Rick Geddes with Cornell University. Thanks for coming on. It's very interesting stuff.
Thanks, Ernie. Thanks for inviting me.
Appreciate you being on. All right, coming up on America's Radio News, the head of the NRA doesn't think any of the gun bills being offered have any chance of passage. The 30-year fixed mortgage remains at low levels, and President Obama says he's ready to do a few fundraisers here and there if he needs to. News from around the world and across the nation, we always have it for you right here on The Drive Home on America's Radio News.
On your radio and online at AmericasRadioNewsNetwork.com. This is America's Radio News.
Story, you know you've got the details right.
America's Radio News Network.
If it's important to you, it's important to us. Coast to coast right here on America's Radio News. This is Ernie Brown. It's 11 before the top of the hour on The Drive Home. The average U.S. rate on the 30-year fixed mortgage was unchanged this week, near historic lows, while the average rate on the 15-year loan fell. Low mortgage rates could help strengthen the housing recovery. Mortgage buyer Freddie Mac said the rate on the 30-year loan stayed at 3.53. That's still near the 3.31% rate that was reached in November, the lowest in recordings dating to 1971. The 15-year fixed mortgage is at 2.77%, the record low 2.63%. Cheap mortgages encouraging more people to buy homes and refinance, trends that could help boost the economy later on this year. A lawyer for the family of a teenage Mexican boy who was apparently fatally shot by a U.S. Border Patrol agent in October says an autopsy report shows the victim was struck by at least 11 bullets, mostly in his back. Luis Parra says he believes the Border Patrol used excessive force in gunning down the 16-year-old. Border Patrol says its agents responded October 10th to reports of drug smugglers climbing over the fence into the U.S. from Mexico in Nogales, Arizona. The agency said one agent opened fire through the fence as authorities on the U.S. side were being pelted with rocks. Border Patrol officials declined to comment on the autopsy report, a parallel investigation going on in Mexico as well. The Curiosity rover drilled a test hole in a Martian rock in preparation for the real thing. Images released by NASA showed a ring of powder that was generated by the drill at the end of the rover's robotic arm. The hole measured less than an inch deep. Now, scientists plan to analyze the latest activity, dubbed a mini drill test, before commanding Curiosity to drill any deeper. One of its major tasks is to drill into a rock and transfer the ground-up powder to the onboard laboratories for analysis, a first on Mars. Curiosity landed in an old crater near the Martian equator last year on a mission to gauge whether environmental conditions were favorable for microbes to exist now or maybe in the past. And Governor Chris Christie vetoed a bill that would have made New Jersey the third state to legalize gambling over the Internet, but he says he'll support such a law if it were put on a 10-year trial period. His decision marked the second time since 2011 that the Republican governor vetoed an Internet bill passed by New Jersey's legislature. Christie wants the state to review online gambling after 10 years. He also wants the casino's tax rate on Internet winnings raised to 15%, up from 10%. Supporters, including Atlantic City's 12 casinos, say allowing patrons to gamble online would have brought much-needed new revenue to the gambling halls and tax money to the state. So far, Nevada and Delaware have legalized Internet gambling, but nobody else just yet. Washington and Colorado State are working out the details of how to handle their state's new cannabis legislation. On the federal level, two Democratic congressmen have introduced a pair of bills that would decriminalize marijuana use and set up a tax code to capitalize on it. Congressman Earl Blumenauer of Oregon told CNN how much revenue he thinks the government can generate by putting a 50% tax on marijuana.
Well, the estimates vary, $10, $20, $30 billion a year. This is a gray area now. But the point is that it is a large market when up to 18 to 20 million people use it illegally every month, and there are a million medical marijuana users approximately. This is a significant area of revenue, and as I said, it would save money from enforcement and arresting. I'm confident that it would be a swing of at least $100 billion, but more important, it would get us back to a situation where we're not doing something that most Americans oppose. It would save money, it would collect tax money, and it would eliminate the hypocrisy of suggesting that marijuana is more dangerous than meth or cocaine.
Now, critics of the congressman say a 50% tax on marijuana would put people right back where they are now, buying it on the black market. Despite President Obama's adamant claim to be a Christian, some opponents wonder if it's really true or not. Nevertheless, Obama spoke at the National Prayer Breakfast this morning about having faith in the nail-scarred hands of Jesus and the importance of loving even those we disagree with.
God has told us how he wishes for us to spend our days. His commandments are there to be followed. Jesus is there to guide us, the Holy Spirit to help us. Love the Lord God with all your heart, with all your soul, and with all your mind. Love your neighbor as yourself. Seeing everyone, even in those with whom you disagree most vehemently, the face of God, for we are all his children. As Christians, we place our faith in the nail-scarred hands of Jesus Christ. But so many other Americans also know the close embrace of faith. Muslims and Jews, Hindus and Sikhs, and all Americans, whether religious or secular, have a deep, abiding faith in this nation.
Well, critics are questioning the constitutionality of President Obama's use of drones to attack Americans who are presumably working with terrorists. There's no probable cause, no opportunity to surrender, and Americans are on a kill list. Is that constitutional? Congressman Mike Rogers, chairman of the House Permanent Select Committee on Intelligence, told MSNBC that these drone attacks are not unconstitutional, and the Congress has always known about them.
We do have oversight into it. I knew about those operations, the targeting sets, all of that leading up to it, including very, very shortly thereafter. And I review all of the airstrikes that we use under this title of the law. There is oversight. So even leading up to the Al-Aqsa, remember, the Al-Qaeda leader in the Arabian Peninsula had planned several events. One was the Christmas Day bomber. So he recruited that person, trained that person, financed that whole operation, equipped that person, and got them on an airplane that flew into the United States that, but for a fraction of an inch in the injector on that particular explosive device, would have been a catastrophe over the Detroit suburbs flying into the airport on Christmas Day. That's who we're talking about. So this is somebody who had said that he didn't want his U.S. citizenship anymore. He had officially joined Al-Qaeda. Al-Qaeda had declared war on the United States. When people say, oh, there's a list of Americans, not really. And this is a time-honored tradition. The legal basis of this goes back many, many years when U.S. citizens would go and fight for foreign nations that were engaging in combat with the United States.
Andrew Tallman now at the international desk.
After decades of distrust, Iran's president says his country wants closer relations with Egypt. Mahmoud Ahmadinejad told a news conference Thursday on the sidelines of an Islamic summit that Iran wants, quote, comprehensive and unfettered, quote, ties with Egypt. The first Iranian leader to visit Egypt in three decades, Ahmadinejad has used his three-day stay to try and cement ties with the most populous Arab nation. He played down a public admonishment by Egypt's most prominent cleric, who warned Iran against spreading its Shiite faith in the predominantly Sunni Muslim Middle East. Asked whether Iran was prepared to share its nuclear technology with Egypt, Ahmadinejad dodged the question, saying only that his country would have no problem cooperating with Egypt in, quote, technical, technological, and scientific fields. Meanwhile, across the Red Sea, the president of Yemen has sent a message to his Iranian counterpart, calling on him to stop sending arms to Yemen and quit supporting the southern separatist movement. An official in the office of President Abed Rabu Mansour Hadi said Thursday that the message to the Iranian president went through diplomatic channels earlier this week. Yemen's defense ministry said Wednesday that Yemeni authorities last month seized a ship carrying a wide variety of Iranian-made weapons. From the America's Radio News International Desk, I'm Andrew Tallman.
Coming up on America's Radio News, Congress gets some inside information about the use of drones. We have a major winter storm heading towards New England for a chilly weekend, and a current judge under scrutiny for what he did as a prosecutor. Keeping you up to date, the latest breaking news, it's right here on America's Radio News, coming up.
Get in the know. This is America's Radio News.
from the nation's capital. If it happens in America or anywhere in the world, you'll hear about it first here, right here. Now, your anchor, Ernie Brown.
America's Radio News Network. The drive home.
News from around the world and across the nation right here on America's Radio News. The drive home continues. It's 6 after the top of the hour. Welcome to a February 7th, Thursday edition of the drive home. And here are some of the stories I'm following today.
United States, Japan, Korea, and other countries in that part of the world are going to do everything we have to do to promote security and prosperity, and that they should be a part of that, not against it.
Concern about what role China plays in the future.
We really need to change the culture in America to where it's really not okay to buy a gun for someone else. Right now, the penalties are so low that there's a high incidence of this, and this is hurting our country.
What's the definition of common sense when it comes to guns?
The legal basis of this goes back many, many years when U.S. citizens would go and fight for foreign nations that were engaging in combat with the United States.
Using drones in the war on terrorists spurs a lot of different opinions. We're watching the world and sweeping the nation to bring you all the latest news. New England bracing for a major winter storm expected to dump up to 2 feet of snow in some places from Friday into Saturday. The National Weather Service says most of southern New England could get between 18 and 24 inches of snow starting tomorrow morning and continuing into Saturday afternoon. The Cape could get a little less, although forecast totals vary widely. One meteorologist says it's looking like it's going to be a very powerful storm. If everything falls the way it has the potential to do, it could be among the top 10 snowstorms ever in New England. New York City has a blizzard warning up as well. They're expecting anywhere from 4 to 6 inches. The mayor says the city's ready, and if bad weather has to happen, it's better to have it on a weekend. Bank of America has been telling its customers you'd best have some cash on hand. Power may go out, and that may mean no ATMs would be available. Defense Secretary Leon Panetta says looming across-the-board budget cuts will present the U.S. military with the most significant readiness crisis in more than a decade. He's urging lawmakers to head off automatic spending reductions quickly to keep from harming national defense. He says the lack of a 2013 defense budget compounds the problem. Panetta urges Congress to deal with the federal deficit and develop a balanced budget to stop the constant uncertainty. The automatic cuts, known as the sequester, result from the failure of Congress to cut the deficit by $1.2 trillion over a decade, the Pentagon facing a $42.7 billion budget cut starting in March and ending in September. And the White House's pick for CIA chief says the harsh interrogation technique known as waterboarding is reprehensible and should not be used on terror suspects, but he's not calling it torture. John Brennan said waterboarding should never have been legal and will never be used under his watch if he's confirmed as the CIA director. But he stopped short several times of calling it torture despite pointed questioning today by Senator Carl Levin of Michigan. Waterboarding simulates drowning, and critics call it a form of torture. It's used in at least 3 cases against terror suspects during the administration of President George W. Bush. President Obama ordered it banned shortly after taking office in 2009. Well, the city of Los Angeles on high alert as they continue to search for the former police officer Christopher Dorner in connection with the shooting of 3 officers this morning and the killing of an Irvine couple over the weekend. This is the chief, Charlie Beck, of the LAPD.
As you all know, the LAPD is working in coordination with law enforcement agencies throughout Southern California in apprehending Christopher Jordan Dorner. Christopher Dorner is wanted for a series of crimes, including assaults on officers and 3 homicides in Southern California in the past week. The Los Angeles Police Department and our allied law enforcement agencies are implementing all measures possible to ensure the safety of our LAPD personnel, their families, and the Los Angeles community. We will continue to do so until Dorner is apprehended and all threats have been abated. Dorner is to be considered armed and extremely dangerous. Christopher Jordan Dorner is described as a male African-American, approximately 6 foot tall, 270 pounds. He's 33 years of age. He has black hair and brown eyes.
Now, earlier today, the chief listed the crimes they believe Dorner has committed in the last few days.
On Sunday, February 3rd, 2012, in Irvine, California, a double homicide. During this incident, we believe Dorner shot and killed Monica Kwan and Keith Lawrence while they sat in a vehicle in a parking structure. Wednesday, February 6th, about 8:30 p.m. in San Diego, an attempt robbery, boat theft. Dorner attempted to steal a boat from a boat owner in San Diego. He was not successful and fled the location. This morning at 1:25, in Chino, California, LAPD officers assigned to a protection detail received a tip from a citizen that Dorner may be in the area. They observed Dorner, and Dorner fired upon the officers. Officers returned fire, and one officer received a non-life-threatening wound to his head, a graze wound literally inches from killing him. Dorner fled, and due to damage to the police vehicle because of his gunshots, the officers were unable to pursue him. Today, at 1:45 in Riverside, California, the murder and attempt murder of Riverside Police Department officers. Dorner ambushed two Riverside police officers, resulting in the death of one and the severe injury of the other.
And the latest news I have on that case, authorities have confirmed that a burned-out pickup truck found near a Southern California ski resort does belong to that officer they're looking for, the former officer, rather. The county sheriff, John McMahon, says that his truck was found near the Bear Mountain ski area at Big Bear Lake, about 80 miles east of Los Angeles. He has not been found, but the door-to-door search is underway. CIA director nominee John Brennan had his confirmation hearing earlier today, and, well, there were a lot of interruptions. There were protesters there, and here's just a little bit of that.
Nominee to lead the Central Intelligence Agency. I am deeply grateful to President Obama for the confidence he has placed in me by sending my name forward to the Senate for consideration. I would not be here today without the love and support of my wife, Kathy, who has been my life partner for 34 years, and who, like the spouses of many other public servants and intelligence professionals, has made numerous sacrifices over the years.
Would you pause, Mr. Brennan? If you would remove that individual, please, as quickly as you can. Thank you.
And I'm very pleased to be joined today by my wife, Kathy, and my brother, Tom.
I speak for the mothers.
All right. We will stop again.
All right. Pakistan, Somalia, and Who else?
Please remove that woman.
The CIA and the Obama administration refuse to even tell Congress. They won't even tell Congress what countries we are killing children in.
Please.
Senator Feinstein.
If you could please expedite the removal.
Coming up on America's Radio News, if you're traveling to the Northeast over the next couple of days, you'd best check with your airlines. Lots of flights being canceled in anticipation of a big, big winter storm. Deep-fried foods may be causing some major health problems, and Lance Armstrong is deciding whether he wants to talk to anybody anymore. Keeping you up to date, the latest breaking news, it's right here on America's Radio News, coming up.
You can listen to them talk about the news,
or you can listen to us break in. This is America's Radio News. Reliable and always informative. This is America's Radio News.
This is Ernie Brown on the drive home on America's Radio News. It's 20 minutes after the top of the hour. I'm just doing a little checking to find out some numbers for you. The total number of flights that have been canceled over the next couple of days in New York and Boston, they're at about 1,900 system-wide. This is around the country, 1,550 flights canceled at New York and Boston. So if you're flying into the Northeast because of this big winter storm that's moving in, that weather is going to be breaking probably early in the morning tomorrow. If you are flying to the Northeast, you'd best check and plan ahead because the chances are good your flight is going to be at least delayed, at worst canceled. So do check ahead of times once again. And even if you're not flying to the Northeast specifically, do check to see that your plane is going to actually take place. Sometimes the flight you get on connected in the Northeast, and it may be stuck up there. So you'll find out once you check with the airline. Union leaders are rolling out a 14-city campaign to mobilize support for President Obama's immigration overhaul plans. AFL-CIO President Richard Trumka said the Labor Federation will hold rallies, educate voters, and pressure elected officials using the same grassroots infrastructure that helped re-elect the president. The campaign began yesterday in Raleigh, North Carolina. It'll continue Monday in Las Vegas. Trumka says labor and business leaders also continue to work out an agreement on revising the nation's guest worker program that allows businesses to hire foreign workers for seasonal employment. Unions strongly support a path to citizenship for the nation's estimated 11 million illegal immigrants, saying that change will lead to better wages and working conditions. Of course, unions also hoping to boost their sagging membership ranks from the workers who would become new citizens. And deep-fried foods may be causing trouble in the Deep South. A study finds that people who consume a lot of fried foods and drinks like sweet tea and soda were 40% more likely to suffer a stroke than people who ate that way only about one or two times a month. Researchers say the study might help explain why blacks in the Southeast suffer more strokes. Blacks 5 times more likely than whites to have the heavy southern dietary pattern. That diet tied to the highest stroke risk include things like fried foods, hamburgers, hot dogs, bacon, ham, liver, gizzards, and sugary drinks. By the way, if you've never had gizzards before, they really are good. In contrast, people who ate a lot of vegetables, fruits, fish, and whole grains had a lower stroke risk. Results reported at a stroke conference in Honolulu. Well, people, you say gizzards and people give you the look, unless you've had them.
They're disgusting.
They're delicious.
No, they're not.
No, John, they're good.
Okay.
You're giving me the look. You just have to deep fry them, but they're not necessarily good for you. Does prayer work? President Obama clearly thinks so, but he also laments the seemingly short shelf life that prayers by public officials often seem to have when compared with the negative news barraging people on cable television.
I have to say, this is now our fifth prayer breakfast. And it is always just a wonderful event. But I do worry sometimes that as soon as we leave the prayer breakfast, everything we've been talking about the whole time at the prayer breakfast seems to be forgotten. On the same day of the prayer breakfast. I mean, you'd like to think that the shelf life wasn't so short. But I go back to the Oval Office and I start watching the cable news networks and it's like we didn't pray.
Well, it seems the preemptive and precautionary drone attacks issued by President Obama, which have recently gained media attention, get bipartisan support on the Hill. Republican Congressman Mike Rogers, the chairman of the House Permanent Select Committee on Intelligence, told MSNBC he thinks the drone attacks are a smart way to keep America safe.
If you have someone who has joined this organization, and they may not be engaged in plot A today, but they are part of an organization that is constantly plotting and planning to kill Americans, and so they've joined the enemy. And so you don't just kill the enemy when they're at the gate. You try to make sure that you get them before they even get close to having an operation that could kill Americans. That's the whole safety net that we try to produce anywhere in the world. And so there isn't some long list of Americans. I can candidly tell you that. Now, there are some who just don't like the notion at all that we use airstrikes at any place in the world. I got that. I passionately disagree with them. This has been a huge value added in disrupting Al-Qaeda events. And guess what? Sometimes Americans have joined that organization to kill Americans. That's their choice, not ours. And this is only overseas, and they have to be over a long period of time or at least have great information that they're a part of that organization. And I can tell you that there is not a long list of Americans on that list.
Well, yesterday, the Boy Scouts of America, they were supposed to make a decision on whether they were going to let gay scouts and gay leaders into the organization. However, they announced that they'd put off that decision until May. Now, if it does happen, local troops would then be able to decide on their own whether or not they'd accept gay people into the program. Well, for former den mother Jennifer Terrell, the treatment of gays by the Boy Scouts of America is very personal for her. Here's what she told CNN.
I don't know. I don't trust my gut when it comes to BSA because I always think they're going to do the right thing and then they don't. So I'm really actually super nervous about it.
You seem very emotional about it.
I am. It's really personal to me. I didn't want to even join the Boy Scouts, and he wanted to. He was so excited. It was so hard to tell him, you know, no, he doesn't understand that people are discriminatory. So I agreed to go, and I spoke to the Cub Master, and he said, it'll be fine. You won't have any problems. And I didn't. And actually, that same day, their leader canceled and said, I can't do it. So they asked me to be leader, knowing full well that I was gay. I never had a problem until they asked me to be treasurer. I found a lot of mistakes. I started asking a lot of questions. And then that day that I was supposed to have a meeting to say, where's this money, is the day that I received the phone call saying, oh, by the way, you're gay. You can't be here anymore.
And John Normand at the international desk.
An Israeli woman has turned to Facebook to beat a parking ticket and expose a Tel Aviv road crew. Hila Ben-Baruch says she parked her car legally near her Tel Aviv home, only to find it gone and replaced with a handicapped parking sign. City Hall slapped her with more than $300 in fines. And making matters worse, she says city representatives accused her of lying when she called to complain. Determined to prove her innocence, she obtained footage from a security camera showing municipal workers painting the handicap symbol under her car, then towing the vehicle away. She told Channel 2 she was shocked. The video put on Facebook has gone viral. The Tel Aviv municipality has apologized and refunded the fines. For America's Radio News, I'm John Normand.
Coming up on America's Radio News, we'll get you the latest on that former police officer that's wanted for murder in California. Also, an update on the storm that's heading for the Northeast. Plus, controversy over a Civil War figure in Memphis. We'll tell you all about it on America's Radio News and The Drive Home next.
Get in the know. This is America's Radio News. Radio News Network, where the nation's news breaks first.
Thanks for being with me on the drive home today. It's 27 before the top of the hour, Thursday, February 7th. This is Ernie Brown, and here are some of the stories coming up.
United States, Japan, Korea, and other countries in that part of the world are going to do everything we have to do to promote security and prosperity, and that they should be a part of that, not against it.
Concern about what role China plays in the future.
We really need to change the culture in America to where it's really not okay to buy a gun for someone else. Right now, the penalties are so low that there's a high incidence of this, and this is hurting our country.
What's the definition of common sense when it comes to guns?
The legal basis of this goes back many, many years when U.S. citizens would go and fight for foreign nations that were engaging in combat with the United States.
Using drones in the war on terrorists spurs a lot of different opinions. We're watching the world and sweeping the nation to bring you all the latest news. Illegal immigrants might be put on about a 10-year path toward a green card under legislation taking shape in the Senate. Democratic Senators Dick Durbin of Illinois and Robert Menendez of New Jersey discussed the timeline in a roundtable meeting with Spanish-language reporters. Aides said later that nothing's been agreed on, and the timeline could easily change. The timeline refers to how long somebody would have to wait in a provisional legal status before qualifying for a permanent residency and a green card. Under current law, wait times for a green card can vary greatly. Prosecutors say victims and witnesses in the Colorado theater shootings have been pestered by conspiracy theorists, impersonated in court filings, and had their addresses and phone numbers posted online. In a motion made public late yesterday, prosecutors say some victims are concerned for their safety. Prosecutors asked the judge to ensure the victims and witnesses' names are redacted from any documents released in the future, although many were identified in previously released court filings. James Holmes is charged with killing 12 people and wounding 70 at a suburban Denver theater on July 20th. He's scheduled to enter a plea next month. The judge has barred attorneys and investigators from speaking publicly about the case and sealed a lot of the documents, prompting numerous objections and requests for information from media outlets and a lot of others. The NCAA says it wants a judge to throw out the federal antitrust lawsuit Pennsylvania's governor filed against it over Penn State's $60 million fine and other penalties resulting from the Jerry Sandusky child molestation scandal. College sports governing body said in a filing it disagrees with just about every allegation in the complaint against it initiated by Governor Tom Corbett last month. The NCAA said the penalties imposed under a July consent decree with the university are not related to regulation of economic activity, so antitrust law doesn't even apply. It also argues Corbett lacks standing to sue. It calls the governor's lawsuit an inappropriate attempt to drag the federal courts into an intrastate political dispute. Corbett has said the NCAA overstepped its authority. His spokesperson said the lawyers will be reviewing the NCAA's filing. On Wall Street, the Dow was down 42.5 points. The Nasdaq was down about 3 1/3. The S&P 500 down about 2 3/4 or so. A report of a burned pickup truck on a Southern California mountain road is being investigated amid a manhunt for a fired Los Angeles police officer suspected in 3 murders. TV News helicopters have shown a helicopter drop a rifle-equipped team onto a mountain near Big Bear this afternoon. San Bernardino County Sheriff Deputy Zach Beckham says a pickup fire was reported, but there's been no sighting of the suspect, Christopher Dorner. Now, what is behind this guy? Ed Miller, an Emmy Award-winning investigative reporter and the former chief national correspondent for America's Most Wanted, joins us on America's Radio News. Check him out, edmillerreports.com. Ed, thanks for coming on. We appreciate it.
Hey, Ernie. You know, this is a man who has sworn to wage war against his former comrades. Police brass are calling him now a homicidal maniac. there are 40, at least 40 different locations that are being guarded. So in other words, these are police brass, former, what would it be, associates or his superiors that he has threatened. And he, not just the police brass themselves, but their families, and he has threatened to get them. Some of his quotes are unbelievable in a manifesto that he said. This is a man who said, I do not fear death. I died long ago. He said, look to your wives, your husbands, and surviving children directly in the face and tell them the truth as to why your children are dead. In other words, he is holding them responsible for his being fired from the Los Angeles Police Department, and he is going after their families. He says, another quote, I will bring unconventional warfare to those in LAPD uniform, whether on or off duty. And of course, you know what happened this morning, that he shot another police officer, not in LAPD, not a Los Angeles police officer, but in Irvine. This is a very, very dangerous man.
What set him off? What put him on this road?
Well, what put him on this road, first of all, this has been going on for some time. He is seeking revenge against several former police bosses. He's going after their families because he believes that he was fired unjustly from the Los Angeles Police Department. Just very quickly to go back, what happened was he believed that he witnessed some police brutality by his former partner. So he reported it, and there was a police hearing, and they said no, there was no police brutality, but instead they fired him, and he's been on this rampage ever since. So he's saying that he's trying to clear his name, which of course is, you know, by far his name has now been ruined way worse than anything he could have imagined, simply being involved with these murders. So what he really did is last Saturday, this is where it first started, last Saturday he killed the daughter and fiance of his former attorney, Keith Lawrence and Monica Kwan. And that's what started this. And then, of course, he went off on this rampage overnight.
Now, Ed, I saw a story that said they've stretched the manhunt out as far as Las Vegas on this as well.
Actually, it's even further than that. It's now down to Mexico. And what they're concentrating on right now, simply because of his vehicle being found, and that is his vehicle that was found in Big Bear. That's a mountain community where a lot of folks outside of Los Angeles go skiing. But it's way beyond Big Bear. It's up to Las Vegas because he has a house near Las Vegas. Now down to Mexico because they fear he could have gone there. But this is a man who exists. The real danger here is this is a man who is certainly not afraid of danger. He knows how police operate. He used to be a police officer, and this is a guy who can, you know, stay up with only a few hours sleep. He is vengeful, and he is armed with assault weapons. They believe several assault weapons.
Do they have any idea where he might be, any direction No. They're going, any leads?
No, the lead would be, of course, right now they're searching Big Bear, this area in Big Bear. They actually helicoptered a SWAT team in there because of the vehicle being set fire. They believe he might still be in that area. But, you know, again, this is a guy who's very, very clever. He also, they believe much earlier today that he was in the San Diego area and tried to hijack a boat because they found his wallet and ID down there, but he was nowhere to be found. So again, there's a lot of false alarms. He may be doing this. He may have set fire to that vehicle in Big Bear and jumped into another one. This is a very clever, clever man. Again, an expert marksman, and a very big guy, 6 feet tall, 270 pounds, big, dangerous, vengeful man.
Ed Miller, Emmy Award-winning investigative reporter, the former chief national correspondent for America's Most Wanted. Check him out, edmillerreports.com. Ed, always a pleasure. Thanks for coming on.
Thank you, Ernie.
All right, latest I have for you on the very, very big winter storm coming into the Northeast in the next 24 hours. You have 1,550 flights canceled just at New York and Boston so far, 1,900 total system-wide if you're flying. Anywhere tomorrow that's going to take you close to the Northeast, you might want to make sure that your flight's actually going to take place. And the latest, I just got this breaking off the wire, 125 officers are tracking, going door-to-door, searching for that police officer, that ex-police officer we were just talking about here a moment ago. Coming up on the program, Congress gets some inside information about the use of drones. We'll tell you more about that big storm coming to the Northeast. And a 17-year-old abuse victim is rescued in Kansas City. keeping you up to date. The latest breaking news, we have it for you right here on America's Radio News.
On your radio and online
at AmericasRadioNewsNetwork.com.
This is America's Radio News. Got the details right.
America's Radio News Network.
Here to keep you up to date with the latest breaking news, this is Ernie Brown on The Drive Home on America's Radio News. Weeks after New York enacted the nation's toughest gun laws, California lawmakers want that state to do even more in response to recent mass shootings. Democrats who control the state legislature revealed 10 bills today they said would make California the most restrictive state for possessing firearms. They were joined at a Capitol News conference by the mayors of Los Angeles and San Francisco. Among the bills is one that would outlaw the future sale of semi-automatic rifles with detachable magazines, a restriction that would prevent an assailant from reloading quickly. Lawmakers also want to make some prohibitions apply to current gun owners, not just weapons sold in the future. Like New York, California also would require background checks just for buying ammunition. A Kansas City woman whose phone call led to the discovery of a frail 17-year-old handcuffed to a metal pole in the basement of the home next door says she saw him handcuffed to a door inside the townhome 2 weeks ago. She said that she struggled with whether to contact authorities, but now she feels relieved after the mentally challenged teen was found Monday curled up in a fetal position on a concrete floor. The 24-year-old moved to the apartment complex in August and became friends with the teen. She says that during the first month she lived there, the teen spent most days outside, but after that she didn't see him until late last month. Kansas City police say no charges have been filed against the teen's parents, but it's early now. Jack Boston joins us, a senior meteorologist with AccuWeather, here to tell us about the Northeast Snowmageddon that could be happening beginning tomorrow. Jack, thanks for coming on. We appreciate it.
Oh, you're very welcome, Ernie. Hello. How are you today?
Doing very well. This looks like a big one.
Yeah, it is really big one, and it puts in mind just about four winters ago, right in Washington over into Baltimore and Philadelphia. Talk about Snowmageddon, those two huge February snowstorms. Well, they're missing us for the most part this year. I don't know if anybody's complaining about that, but this one will equal, or rival anyway, some of those storms we had back in the winter of 2009-2010. We are going to see what we'd call light to moderate storm move on through the Mid-Atlantic with a little bit of snow in some of the interior sections and some rain, some pretty good downpours along the coast. But then once this thing gets out over the water and joins forces with a real strong storm that's coming through the Great Lakes, it'll be like lighting a match as this storm will blow up. It'll blow up off of the south of Cape Cod and throw a heavy blizzard-like snowstorm all the way back to New York City, where there could be 6 to 12 inches of snow. But that ain't nothing compared to Providence, Boston, Worcester, Massachusetts, Concord, New Hampshire, Portland, Maine. As I heard you say, 1 to 2 feet of snow, maybe even more in some locations. And not only is the snow going to get deep, there is going to be a lot of wind. In fact, wind gusts could reach hurricane force near the southeast New England coast. Just imagine the blowing and drifting of all that snow that's going to occur over New England. It's probably going to shut down some areas for several days up in New England. And if you have any travel plans into that part of the country, including New York City and Boston, forget about it. It is going to be travel delays aplenty, if not flight cancellations, probably for a couple of days anyway.
Yeah, and that is a key question: is how long are we going to have the blowing snow? I'm just curious if this is going to be something that begins tomorrow and it'll run through Monday, or is it something that's a couple of days? And then how long is the snow going to hang around?
Well, the snow, it's going to take a long time to melt that much snow. Of course, we do expect milder temperatures to move into the northeast by early next week. We may be seeing temperatures getting up to 40 or into the 40s, and that sun, of course, now that we're getting into the second week of February, getting a little higher up in the sky, a lot higher up in the sky than it was back around the winter solstice. The reason I'm saying that is that it'll help to melt some of the snow as the sun's getting a little higher angle in the sky. I would say, though, it's going to be a powdery, deep snow. It'll probably blow around pretty good right through at least Saturday night. The winds will probably not be quite as strong on Sunday, but I think we're really going to take the whole weekend to really start to make a dent in what that snowstorm is going to do. And that's not to mention, we're all hearing about the snow, all this heavy snow, blizzard conditions, but keep in mind that this is probably going to cause some hurricane-like damage along some of the coastal areas, all the way from the Maine coast down through Massachusetts and even down to Cape Cod and the Rhode Island coastline. There's going to be a lot of damage from the wind from this storm as well.
Is this going to be the first of several of these type of storms, you think, that's going to develop over the waning days of winter?
Well, you know, we're going into a very stormy pattern. There is no doubt about that. It's hard to pinpoint when everything will come together like is going to in this one during the next couple of days. But there are more opportunities coming up. The closest one I can see, the 13th or 14th of February, somewhere in the northeast, could get hit by another strong nor'easter. And then I think we got another opportunity once or maybe even twice before the end of the month. So I think this is going to end up being a pretty stormy February when all is said and done.
Now, is this for the Northeast? How about the rest of the country? Are they facing the same types of winters?
Well, I think especially the places, we see a pattern developing where cold air is going to come down into the central United States, into the Great Lakes, and that may set places like a little further south, maybe the Tennessee Valley, Arkansas, Oklahoma, maybe a couple of these systems bringing some snow and ice that far south. You know, we're on the fence as if we think the cold air is going to get down to Florida such that it would cause any kind of problems with the citrus crop, because that often happens when we have the cold air coming south. We think right now maybe it doesn't penetrate quite that far south, but I think there's going to be a lot of winter weather in much of the central and eastern United States over the next 2 to 3 weeks. And out in the west, it's just going to get very cold. There will be some snow, but probably not the strong storms like will happen in the parts of the plains in the eastern United States during the next couple of weeks.
All right, Jack, real quick, when will the first flakes start falling?
Okay, right now, I think that there's going to be some pretty heavy snow with that northern system already happening, really. Lower Michigan, it'll push over into upstate New York, and okay, that'll happen tonight and tomorrow. Some areas getting 6 to 10 inches of snow, but that's nothing compared to when that coastal system gets going. I think we're going to rain most of the day, or at least a good portion of the day in New York City tomorrow, switches to snow. The blizzard conditions probably commencing there and moving on northeast anytime from later tomorrow right through tomorrow night and into Saturday as well.
Jack Boston, senior meteorologist with AccuWeather. Thank you, Jack. We appreciate the information.
You're very welcome. Have a good one.
And don't forget, check your flight if you're flying to the northeast, because you have all sorts of weather issues coming up. Thanks for joining me on The Drive Home. We'll do it again tomorrow for a Friday. This is Ernie Brown keeping you up to date. The latest breaking news right here on America's Radio News. Journalism without agenda.